You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is the 21st of October 2016, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Unfortunately, we don't have Matthew Heimbach once again, but we do have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Dr. Johnson, how are you doing today?
Hi, thank you for having me on again.
Thank you for coming on again. I think you're doing great at stepping in here at the last minute like that. Hopefully we've got something interesting to talk about today, something that I know caused a lot of comments in the comment section when you did your Orthodox Nationalist recently on the new Russian republics. And I thought maybe we could go into that a little bit more today. I mean, I've just been having a look at the paper that you produced on this. And there's a hell of a lot of research that you've done into it. I wasn't aware that their constitution, that what they had written into the constitution was so good. I mean, they've actually even banned oligarchy in itself, which I think is the first time that I've seen that. They do speak negatively about National Socialism, but they're talking about, I think what they're really talking about is the way that National Socialism has been put across by the communists, because they're also talking about being against Stalinism. They seem to be against state intrusion in too many areas, but at the same time they're talking about nationalizing the industry. So you know, we're getting sort of mixed messages, I think, in the nationalist community about what's really going on in the Ukraine. And on top of that, I think we've got to feel very sorry for them for having two revolutions, and both revolutions being sort of taken over by the Jewish oligarchy. This is the way that I see it, Dr. Johnson. But perhaps you'd like to make a comment on that, or to let the listeners know a bit more about the research that you've been doing into this.
Well, you know, I wanted to bring this up because Ukraine is one of the reasons that Hillary is screaming for World War III. And if we're all going to die for something, it might be nice to know about it a little bit. Of course, the other thing is Syria. These are the two things we're supposed to go to war with Russia against, for the purpose of it. It's a National Socialist government. They make a comment about Nazi Germany in terms of a dictatorship, but everything they have there, in terms of social egalitarianism, the nationalization of strategic sectors of the economy, paternalism and the dominance of the father, the dominance of the family in social life. And this is not Marxism in any sense of the word. It is a social nationalist concept. It's written right into their constitution. I'm the first one to translate that. These two republics are some of the most significant things that have happened in European history since the fall of the USSR, because these are openly national socialist states. They're at war with the bankers. They're at war with the Jews, and they make that very clear elsewhere. And since the oligarchs in both Russia and Ukraine are almost exclusively Jewish, it's just automatic. They have no choice but to be anti-Jewish in their general approach. And they've been condemned as terrorists by every leftist and liberal and conservative group around the world. But anti-globalization is their big thing. That's their big focus. They're Eurasianists. They're nationalists. They're Orthodox religiously, so they certainly have nothing to do with communism in the Leninist sense.
Well, it's interesting that you drew a parallel there with Syria. I was watching a program the other day on the BBC News channel, and they had a representative of Russia there, and they wanted to talk about Syria, but he was saying that Ukraine is the important issue, the way that Ukraine is being put across to the Western people through the Western media. And he was saying this is a really important issue, is what's going on in the Ukraine. And they wouldn't really let him talk too much about it? Is the fighting still going on there? Are there still Russian people getting killed by the Ukrainian authorities? I see, looking at your paper, that there was a lot of people killed in the prisons and sort of these massacres of Russian people that I really wasn't aware of before. You know, we haven't really heard anything about this in the Western media, these attacks on Russian people, apart from the war bit, obviously.
Well, as soon as the rioters took over the government in the summer of 2014, their promises all went out the window. The new government was strictly Jewish, oligarchical, and they immediately fired a bunch of people. They raised their own salaries. It was just a completely ridiculous, it was a complete fraud. The economy collapsed even more than it already had collapsed, and anything that was even remotely profitable, they sold off to Western creditors. And that's why the Eastern militias took over, because they were sending a governor out there to sell off all the steel mills and the coal mines, and they wouldn't let that happen. They took up arms and they won. The Ukrainian army mostly deserted. It's not really an army in a normal sense of the word. They weren't going to shoot other Ukrainians. Most of them deserted to Russia. There are about 60,000 cases, believe it or not, of desertion from the authorities in Kiev. No one's going to fight for the oligarchs or die for them. The new Russian republics have won every engagement. But yes, the fighting is still going on, although today it's between the militias of East Ukraine and mercenaries paid for by the U.S. Taxpayer.
So it's a similar situation with this Free Syrian Army that's really the Syrian Free Army, which is free of any Syrians. It's all just made up of mercenaries. They're paid for by America and the EU. So you think a similar thing is going on in the Ukraine then?
It's really one and the same war. Yeah, you're right. It's one and the same war. The POWs that have been taken by the new republics are from Georgia, Poland, or the Baltic states. So these aren't really Ukrainians. I mean, prior to the war breaking out, Ukrainians had a pretty high estimation of Russia, especially since the Russian economy took off and theirs was just stagnating and getting worse and worse as time went on. But a lot of the Russian press has been banned in Ukraine. The Russian language has been banned in government agencies and at the airports. So I'm not really sure what the average Ukrainian is getting in terms of news anymore.
Well, let me play sort of devil's advocate here a little bit. They're banning the Russian language, but at the same time, they've got parts that used to be part of the Ukraine that have been taken over by these Russians that have declared these new republics. I know that you could say that Crimea wasn't really part of Ukraine anyway, but Donbass and Luhansk were originally part of the Ukraine, and they've sort of declared themselves these new republics. Are they predominantly Russian then? If say this was your country and half of it suddenly declared itself as being a new republic and the people that were there were from a different country, you know, wouldn't that cause problems? I mean, what's your opinions on that?
Well, they're mostly Russian speakers in the East. It certainly was part of the Ukrainian SSR at one time. But the Cossack Ukraine didn't include those Eastern republics. They were all part of Russia. But they're mostly Russian speakers. And they were always alienated from the government in Kiev that promoted Ukrainianization, which is perfectly fine in Ukrainian areas. Ukraine has every right to be independent. But the Eastern republics, unfortunately, are mostly Russian speakers. But the primary reason for taking up arms was the liquidation of their economy, which they wouldn't tolerate. But now their economy is actually growing. They've taken the ruble as their currency, and they're doing better than the rest of the country by far.
So have those parts of the country, they've always been Russian then, or were they Russians that moved in there under Stalin? Because you know that he moved populations about a lot, didn't he? Were they always Russian, that area?
Well, when industrialization first took off, Stalin was importing laborers in the 30s and 40s, but 30s and then in the 50s again. But even prior to that, it was Russian speaking. It wasn't a part of traditional pre-Soviet Ukraine. Pre-Soviet Ukraine would include places like Galicia, Volhynia, Kiev, Podila, places like that. The eastern part was always a part of Russia, a frontier area, Cossack, a part of Russia, but still Russian speaking.
So what you really got then is ethnic nationalism. You've got the country being split along ethnic lines, even though the ethnicity is very similar. The ethnic division is really a language one. But what you've really got is Ukrainian nationalists in one part of the country, and you've got Russian-speaking nationalists in another part of the country that obviously, you know, they wish to live differently. And this is what we keep saying. This is what the problems come down to, is different ethnicities trying to share the same territory. So surely this is quite an obvious solution to the problem, really, is to split along ethnic lines and have a separate part of the country for one group and the other part of the country for the other group. I suspect that more of the problem might be that it's the more industrial area that the Russians are in. Are they in an area that is more likely to be able to make more money than the Ukrainian part of the Ukraine?
That's the key right there. They're 30% of the economy. Most of the exports of the country come from that little area. So that's why they can't let it go. But given the fact that the pro-Russian government that had been elected was thrown out in 2014, a government that was mostly Judaic, and most of the cabinet members were from the U.S. and Georgia. It wasn't even Ukrainian. That made sure that the East was not going to tolerate any further encroachments on their territory. So yeah, it's mostly economic, and that's what the war is over. But at this stage now, there's no way that Kiev could ever take the Eastern Republics back. There's no way they've defeated the Ukrainian army. It would like be like their own Northern Ireland. It wouldn't make any sense.
Well, what the rest of the world needs to do is to recognize these republics, because I don't think they've even recognized Crimea yet, have they? Is there any countries that have recognized Crimea as now being a part of Russia again?
I believe Iran does and Syria does. Cuba does. I'm not sure about North Korea. Burma does. China does. That's all I can think of. So I think that's it.
So the countries that are a part of the East, is it the Shanghai Cooperative Trading Group?
Yeah, for the most part, right. Right. But I'm not sure about Kazakhstan. I'm sure Kazakhstan does, and Belarus does. So yeah, the SCO does, and allies to them.
Well, I think this is the point that this chap was making on this BBC program, is that the rest of the world needs to recognize the fact that we've got these new republics there, and Crimea is now a part of Russia again. So these Nouveau Russians, I mean, they have declared themselves as being separate to the Ukraine and separate to Russia as well, haven't they?
I think they would like to be a part of Russia. Putin hasn't even recognized those two states yet. He's very sympathetic to them. He's assisted them. There's no Russian troops in there. There's volunteers. There's contract people, private sector contract people, but no Russian regulars there. But he has not recognized them yet, which is a big mistake on his part, I think.
Well, this seems to be where the problem is. We get told, oh, there's Russian troops that are in the Ukraine. But it's not Russian troops, from what you say. It's volunteers. It's Russian people that are going over there to help the other Russian speakers. Because before this happened, were the Russians being persecuted right after this revolution? Did they start attacking Russians? I read in your report that there was thousands of them killed in a prison or something.
Well, as soon as the violence ended, the government was overthrown, they banned all Russian media in the capital. And so Russians were kicked out en masse. But the start of the violence in the East had more to do with the liquidation of their economy. So persecution, I mean, under the previous government, Yanukovych, who was generally pro-Russian, they wanted a hands-off policy as far as the East goes, because it's so wealthy compared to the rest of the country. But under the new junta that took over in 14, they were going to liquidate it. And that's where the violence came from. And they totally underestimated the Eastern peoples and what they were capable of doing. There's no troops there, Russian troops there. There's no need for them. The militias have defeated the Ukrainian army, which is very, very poorly trained, very poorly equipped, with no morale, mostly heavy desertion. Putin has no reason to risk major war by sending troops into an area that his allies have already won. So, and there's no POWs that have been Russian soldiers or anything like that. So, So there's no evidence. There's no pictures. There's nothing of any Russian regulars at all. But this is what World War III is supposed to be about, according to Hillary Clinton and the Republican Party.
Well, it seems to me if you've got an area like the Crimea, I mean, they had a vote, didn't they? They had a referendum on this, and 99% of them or whatever voted that they wanted to be a part of Russia again. Crimea was originally a part of Russia. They have their referendum. They all seem to be very happy about it. They were all celebrating it. And if you look at the figures, all their pensions went up, the benefit payments went up, the healthcare went up, all of that went up. And then you've got two other areas that maybe they weren't, they had Russian speakers there, but maybe they weren't quite so linked as Crimea was with Russia, and they proclaimed themselves independent. And again, they're 90% Russian, and they wish to be separate. You know, it just seems to me logical that you would just say, okay, well, you have that separate part, and we'll have our separate part. Because the Ukrainian part has now got this deal with the EU. Surely they can do all their trade deals with the EU now. That's what they wanted. And the Novorussia can do their trade deals with Russia. And Ukraine itself, I think, has done rather well out of this. Because didn't they owe a lot of money to Russia when this happened for fuel? When this revolution broke out, didn't they owe billions to Russia in back payments on fuel, which have never been paid?
Oh, that's right. That's right. And not only that, but they were siphoning fuel. Entire empires in Ukraine were made by siphoning fuel that Russia knew about. They've been supplying gas to Ukraine, even though Ukraine's Russia's deadly enemy, because they know that they'll freeze without it. And they keep, they're willing to negotiate deals. Russia, Ukraine is refusing to pay. And they're going to the West saying that don't say we have to pay. We'll go to court. There's a court case going on in Stockholm right now. And the Ukraine just figures that if we act like the anti-Russian front that the West wants, they'll let us get away with anything. And that's Poroshenko's strategy now. He gets aid. He gets diplomatic support. Doesn't have to pay debts to Russia. And all he has to do is act as militantly anti-Russian as possible. And if the West starts to tire of writing checks to him, then he'll come up with another rumor that there's a Russian invasion around the corner, and then it'll happen again. So it's just manipulation. But it's going to get to the point very soon where the West really is just sick and tired of giving him money. The IMF is giving money that they know they're never going to see again. And it's not going to get the IMF has already given up on any reforms in Ukraine. There's no one to work with who isn't corrupt there. So it's no different than Albania. It's real disaster now, especially since this new government has taken over in 14. They're giving money solely to buttress a anti-Russian power, but even that's getting tiresome.
Well, it's pretty shocking to think that they're actually siphoning the gas off. I mean, this is the actual state, the official establishment state of the country that are involved in siphoning the gas off, and knowing that there's no way that Russia will actually cut the supplies off because they know that they would all freeze to death. You know, that's really sort of moral blackmail.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly right. And Russia is giving gas for free right now, or at a very reduced rate, for the sake of keeping it going, because Europe doesn't have the mechanism yet to bring gas into the area. They're dependent on Russia almost exclusively.
It's a very sad state of affairs when you think they're so close together ethnically. They just speak a slightly different language. That's all it is. And yet they've fallen out like this. And I think it really goes back to the Holodomor and what was done under the Soviet era. But you would think that they sort of drew a distinction between the Soviet era and the Putin era and saw that they were both different. And that under the Soviets, they had, it was a Jewish control that was doing that more so than Russians wanting to starve the Ukrainians. It's a real shame to see two brothers falling out like this. I know we have fallings out in Britain. We've had trouble with the Irish. We've had trouble with Scots, English and Welsh. But it, never at a stage like this where there's been sort of a full-out war between them in modern times. You know, we've had troubles in Ireland, but nothing like this. It seems there's a real hatred on the Ukrainian side for the Russians. And you know, probably on the other side as well, with the Russians for the Ukrainians. It really does seem a shame to me. But if it can't be solved, the solution is to split along ethnic lines. That's what nationalism is about, isn't it? Is having separate territories for the separate ethnicities. So for nationalists to be supporting the Ukrainians in this, I think it sort of goes against some fundamental principles, doesn't it?
It does. The Ukrainian government in Kiev is broke, beyond broke. They're so deep in debt, they can never repay it. Their currency is worthless. Their economy is almost non-existent. And yet they're getting military aid from the U.S. to beef up their army for continued action against the East, and even a possible invasion of Crimea, believe it or not, which I don't think is ever going to happen. But this is where the money is going. What little money they have is going to this security operation, which is laughable. And the U.S. is a part of this, and NATO is a part of this. And so the money that they're getting from the West isn't even going to legitimate humanitarian concerns. It's going to the military.
Well, they're being used as a proxy army against Russia, really, aren't they? That's what the Ukrainians are being used for. And the mercenaries that are there, they're being used just to say, well, look, we're going to get one over on Russia here. We'll take all the trade that the Ukraine was doing with Russia, and we'll take it for the EU and for America, and we'll swipe that from under Putin's nose. You know, that's what it was. I think it's like it's a proxy attack against him, and also to say, and then we've got the EU and NATO right on the borders of Russia, and at the same time that they'll then claim that it's an aggression from Putin. Which it doesn't seem to me that it is an aggression from Putin. It seems to me Putin is defending his Russian people there. And in Syria, he's been asked to go into Syria to help to defend Syria from all these jihadis that are invading, which America is adding to with this recent attack on Mosul. They before that, they opened all the routes up and said to all the jihadis, make your way into Syria. You know, go all of ISIS, head off into Syria. Which shows you that they're not against ISIS either. You know, it's almost as if this is what it's coming down to, is these two superpowers. Putin is standing in the way of America and the globalist superstate, and they will do anything that they can to prevent that. I mean, they want their new world order. They want internationalism. They want to do away with all the borders. And Putin stands for a multipolar world with different nationalities with their own sovereignty. And he seems prepared to protect that for people, you know, like he is in Syria, and with his ally with China, he's got the military strength to back that up. And just today on the BBC, they've been saying that Putin is making a show of strength. He's got these naval vessels traveling through the channel, heading to the Mediterranean. Yep. But, yes. You know, how is that an affront? How is that, sticking two fingers up at the British? Now, he's got to get his vessels to the Mediterranean somehow. You know, he's just taking that route. I don't see anything that's wrong with that. Have you heard that on the news today at all?
I did. Just before we went on, I was looking at it. His aircraft carriers going through there. They're using anything to take a shot at him. Nothing is going to happen to those vessels. Russia has far more of a claim to be in Ukraine than the U.S. does, and certainly far more of a claim to be in Syria than the U.S. does. The two examples are very, very similar, but they're certainly not worth fighting World War III over. But this is what, you know, the U.S. is bringing its missiles into Germany and into the Baltic states. This is what it's over. This alleged non-existent aggression from Putin. And that's why we have to talk about it, because this is what we're on DEFCON, what, 3 now about. And then now you have Hillary Clinton adding that somehow Putin's involved in supporting the American democratic process. I had predicted when Putin took over that this was going to happen, but not to this extent, that he would be accused of this. This is totally blows my mind. But this is something we absolutely have to discuss.
Well, the allegations that they keep making about interfering with the democratic process, I mean, all there's been is exposure of corruption. That's what there's been. There's been exposure of corruption on Clinton's side. If there was corruption on Donald Trump's side, WikiLeaks would be showing that as well. But he's not the one that's got the entire world media in his pockets. He's not the one that has got the control of the voting machines. You know, he Donald Trump isn't the one that's corrupt. Hillary Clinton is the one that's corrupt. And yet, instead of looking at the details of what's in those WikiLeaks revelations that show just how corrupt and criminal that she is, they keep just saying, well, Russia is trying to interfere with the democratic process. You know, if that was Donald Trump that these allegations were coming out about, that they would be indicting him for them. It's a total hypocrisy. It just really infuriates me when I see Hillary Clinton, because everything that comes out of her mouth is lies. You know, she really speaks with a forked tongue. I can't understand how anybody could want to support her. I think those polls have got to be false, because they're saying that she has masses of support, and yet everything about her just shows her to be a consummate liar. A total liar. You know, it, all the fact-checking that's come out has turned out to be lies. You know, she claims that she had nothing to do with this birther thing about Obama, and yet it's come out that she was behind that. You know, the lies with the FBI, getting rid of all those emails so that there's no record of what she did while she was in office when the archives are opened up in 50 years' time. Just incredible criminal behaviour on behalf of Hillary Clinton. And yet all she has to say in answer to it is, oh, well, the guy that exposed all this shouldn't have been interfering. You know, if you see a crime, you're supposed to raise the alarm, aren't you? Doesn't matter who you are. If you see a crime, you see something that's wrong, that shouldn't be happening, you are supposed to raise the alarm. And that's all WikiLeaks have done is raise the alarm that there's all this corruption going on in the Clinton registration, administration. She does just seem to be keen on starting this war, Matt. And she's been beating the drums for that for quite some time now, trying to find any excuse, I think, for starting a war. And this Mosul thing, again, that's aimed at Russia. That's aimed at sending all of ISIS into Syria so that they can fight against Russia. And then they say, oh, well, we need a no-fly zone, which just means shooting down Russian planes.
That's
which
right.
Does mean starting a war, doesn't it? Shooting down Russian planes, you're starting a war. That's an act of war.
Well, as I've said many times, the U.S. economy is failing. It's not getting any better. Banks are beginning to fail again. The American taxpayer is so indebted that there is no way they could bail out the banks anymore. The recovery is simply impossible. To restart the economy by starting a war, by rallying around the flag, and a false flag has to happen soon. There's got to be more to get the Americans fired up than this. So something has got to happen soon. There's got to be an attack, like a Gulf of Tonkin incident or something like that is going to happen. They'll invent something to get Americans angry. But even there, you know, how many people are going to buy it? I don't know. As far as Hillary support, I can tell you honestly, I have never seen a Hillary yard sign. I don't know what they look like. Democrats are not happy with her. They were into Bernie, maybe Joe Biden. They were not happy with Hillary Clinton. She's so cozy with corporations and with the military industrial complex. They're not happy with her. The polls that I've seen show her at 10-15%. Which makes sense. When you have 65% of Americans saying they don't trust her, how could she be, you know, neck and neck with Donald Trump? It doesn't make any sense. So these polls are rigged. There's no question about it.
Well, you have to be. We're really at a crossroads here. We've got a fork in the road. I mean, we can head down one path, which will take us to war and the flooding of America with refugees and Europe. And we've got another path, which will take us to peace with Russia and an end to the invasion of the refugees. Now, the whole world is counting on the American population to vote for Donald Trump and vote for the sensible choice. And I do think Americans are going to make that choice, Matt. I really do think that. And I pray every day that Donald is going to win, because, you know, I really fear for what's going to happen in the world if he doesn't. So he is going to win. We know he's going to win. And that brings us to the end of the podcast as well. On that cheery note, we do like to try and finish with something happy at the end of the podcast. So, Matt, I say thank you very much for stepping in there like you did at the last minute. Thank you, listeners, for listening. Hopefully, Matthew Heimbach will be back on Monday. So until then, have a great weekend and hail victory.
tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.